Pitch belted deep left center field. That ball is up and that ball is gone. 7-0 Rangers.
That was the icing on the cake in the second inning. Adrian Beltre's two-run homer to cap a seven-run second. After Friday night, the Rangers had a six-run first inning. And yesterday, a three-run 13th inning. Just a terrible trip for the Blue Jays, wrapped up brutally against Texas Rangers with a 12-6 loss, and a loss that the final score really does flatter the Blue Jays because they were just thumped in this one. Good job by Jesse Chavez. It's a little bit of fool's gold because, really, he comes in, it's 9-2, and he was terrific. Five innings, gives up just runs in only one of them, that three-run homer to Mike Napoli with two out in the seventh. Strikes out seven, including five in a row at one point. Good job by Jesse Chavez, but the Blue Jays were really, really out of it by then. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk. We're taking your calls at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. They went 1-5 on the trip. They were terrible on the trip. They were 4-1 coming into the trip. They are now at 500. And this is the first time they've been at 500 since opening day. They have been above 500 the entire season. Except for 2-2. That's right. They were 2-2 after they lost the home opener in brutal fashion. This is the first time they've been at 500 since they were 2-2. They're two games out of a playoff spot. Everything is going to be okay, even though this was a particularly awful road trip. Dan is in Toronto listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Dan, welcome to the Blue Jays Talk. All is not lost.
No, I agree that Mike, but at the same time, I certainly appreciate you taking my call this afternoon. There is a level of concern about the starting pitching. And from 3-5, you have to agree that the Blue Jays have to be beating the bushes hard and trying to find some way to acquire an inning-eating starter that can fit into this rotation. I understand that talent, young talent, you got to let them pitch and stuff like that, but if we're going to continue like this, there's going to be more days like this on the horizon if we don't do if the Blue Jays don't do something to try and acquire someone that can pitch some, maybe up to 200 innings.
Yeah, but I think they have four guys who can pitch 200 innings
okay,
right now. But I don't think you can also reasonably expect things to continue like this. You know, this is a really bad time this week. It was a terrible time. But to extrapolate from that this is how it's going to be the rest of the season, I think is a little bit too much of a leap.
I'm not suggesting that they're going to give up 14 runs.
No, I know. But you're suggesting that the young pitchers are going to have a hard time getting deep into games, which is what they did so well the first 40 games of the season.
Yes, I understand.
And it's a possibility. It certainly is a possibility. But I don't think, and I've always felt this way, that going after one of those quote-unquote innings eaters, one of those people who is going to suck up seven innings a game and give up five runs, and you know that's what he's going to do, but he's a veteran, and he's going to be able to get through it, and he'll be okay, and he'll give you some good starts, and very rarely is he just going to get completely demolished. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in pitchers who have a high ceiling, and even if they do get knocked around a whole bunch, you know, even like 60% of the time, I want to continue to develop them so that I can have them be experienced major league pitchers when the time comes. And I don't think you advance the timetable on this team just because everybody kind of feels like they should make the playoffs this year.
I'm not necessarily saying that I feel that they should make the playoffs this year, but at the same time, don't you think, okay, this is just a name I'm suggesting.
Sure.
Okay. Don't you think that a Ryan Dempster would be a guy that could be into this rotation right now who can pitch in late into games, but he does give up a lot of runs, like you just mentioned. Okay, but isn't he a guy that you could say, okay, the sort of the younger guys could follow? Do you understand what I'm?
I do understand what you're saying. I don't know anything about Ryan Dempster as a person, so
right.
I don't know if he's a kind of guy who would be a leader, who would be someone that the Blue Jays young players would get in step with and follow. So I can't answer that one at all. I do know that he's pitching very well this year.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that he's had 1 year in the last 10 where he's had a whip under 1.3, and that's in the National League. So he's been a guy who walks a lot of people, but when he's healthy, you're right. He does throw a lot of innings. But here's the thing, too, about Ryan Dempster, and I know it's just an example, but Ryan Dempster makes $14 million this year. Is it worth that kind of money to bring in a guy who, just for his veteranness, you know, someone who's probably really not that much better than anything you have here?
But you're just eating that for the rest of this year, because at the end of the year he could walk.
Right. I understand that. But it's still, how much better is he going to be than what the Blue Jays have?
Well, I mean, that's okay. I agree. That's something that we can't forecast. But I mean, at the same time, unfortunately, to see some of the younger pitchers, like some of them were just overmatched this weekend by the Texas. Like that lineup 1 through 9 is solid. I mean,
yeah, but I think you're reading a little too much into that. They, you know, it's easy to see, and I do appreciate the call, Dan, and I want to get to a lot of other people. It's easy to look at this 32 runs allowed in the three games and say these guys, Texas was just too good, that they were overmatched, that they can't compete with a team as good as the Texas Rangers. And the truth of the matter is it was two really good days for the Rangers, Friday and Sunday. And, you know, Kyle Drabek wasn't overmatched by the Rangers. Kyle Drabek walked three guys in the second inning. Not because David Murphy, Mike Napoli, and Mitch Moreland are he's scared of them. But he walked three guys. And then, struggling with his control, threw some fat pitches to Ian Kinsler and Elvis Andrus, and then to Adrian Beltre. But he wasn't overwhelmed. And if you're looking for overwhelmed, Josh Hamilton didn't get a hit off of him. You know, Henderson Alvarez wasn't overwhelmed. Henderson Alvarez allowed one earned run into the sixth inning, when with two out in the sixth inning, he gave up home runs to the 7, 8, 9 hitters in the Texas lineup. That's not about being overwhelmed by a team that's so much better than you. That's just getting your butt kicked. And an example that I love to bring up is Chris Carpenter, because every Blue Jay fan holds up Chris Carpenter as the great, you know, how awesome would it be if the Blue Jays still had him and the one that got away and stuff. Chris Carpenter was brought up in 1997 as a 22-year-old, so older than Drew Hutchison, older than Henderson Alvarez is right now, and 2 years younger than Kyle Drabek. And he was thrown to the wolves, and he got his butt kicked on a regular basis. And Chris Carpenter, in half a season, finished with an ERA of 5.09, finished with a whip of 17.83. But then Chris Carpenter became Chris Carpenter. So I think there is value in this, a value in letting the kids do something and seeing what happens. Because, again, they're as good as or better than a lot of the stuff you'd bring over to just be veterans because they're veterans. Jeremy is in Milton listening on our flagship Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Jeremy, how happy are you that this road trip is over?
Well, I'm very happy that it's over, and thanks for taking my call. I think I called you like 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I said I wish they'd gotten Prince Fielder and Hugh Darvish, to which you responded, well, they could also resurrect Joe DiMaggio.
Right, same odds.
Same odds, and I think what they should do is, well, they've resurrected Harold Ballard as the person that's running the Blue Jays. I think maybe they should just put him back in the grave, and instead of being the 20th payroll in the league, be an actual team with the fourth largest market in North America and start spending $120 million a year. It's not your money. It's not my money.
Jeremy,
it
doesn't matter how much money you spend. You have to spend it wisely.
Well, exactly.
The Blue Jays could be
the New Jersey Devils, and they went and they spent crazy money. Everybody thought that was stupid to
Jeremy.
Go get the that fellow that they got, and now they're playing in the world, and they're going to play for the Stanley Cup.
Right, and if the Blue Jays finish sixth in the American League, they won't make the playoffs. Like New Jersey Devils finished sixth in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, but I don't care.
If they don't make the playoffs?
I want them to be in the running every year.
They will be.
Instead of doing this, let's spend a little bit of money here. Let's not spend any money there. Spend $120 million a year on your team, and you make a mistake, fine. You don't make a mistake, excellent.
Right. You make a mistake, fine. That's exactly how you would feel, Jeremy. If the Blue Jays, answer me this. Stop talking for a second.
Okay.
Answer me this.
Yes.
If the Blue Jays right now traded, I don't know, Kyle Drabek for Vernon Wells.
I don't want them to trade anybody. I want them to go spend on free agents.
Okay, but there aren't any right now. If you want the payroll, Jeremy, if we talk at the same time, no one can understand either one of us, and I hang up on you, okay?
I apologize.
There are no free agents available now. So if you want to add payroll now, the only way to do it is by making trades, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's trade somebody for Vernon Wells. Some minor leaguer you've never heard of for Vernon Wells. Payroll goes up $24 million.
Mm-hmm.
Let's trade somebody else, some other minor leaguer you've never heard of, for Ryan Dempster. Payroll goes up another $12 million. You've just taken the Blue Jays payroll to $110 million. Are they any better?
Oh, can I respond?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
When I stop talking, then you start talking.
Thank you. I don't know. Now is not the time to change.
Okay.
The time to change was when Josh Hamilton from Texas Rangers comes up for his contract.
Which is this winter.
And say, we're getting him.
Would you seriously? And this is interesting, because I wouldn't touch Josh Hamilton with a 50-foot pole.
I'll take a chance.
Really?
Not my money. It's gonna fill the seats in the sense that if they are making a play for the playoffs.
Yes, it is.
And our fellow that's hitting third in the lineup has somebody behind him. We could have had Prince Fielder. We don't. But I mean,
I understand that it's not your money, and I understand that you don't care how much they spend. But
do
you not see that the amount of money they spend affects the amount of money that they spend in the future? That if they make a $25 million mistake, it means that they can't then correct that mistake because they have $214 million sunk in Prince Fielder over the next 9 years?
You know what? I'd like to see a World Series now. I'm not really worried about 10 years from now. I'd like to see them competing for a wild card spot. I'd like to see
them. They're two games out of the wild card.
Well, I mean,
they're two games out of the wild card.
When we spoke last time, they were in the lead.
Right, and they're two games out. That is,
they were going to go back.
Most assuredly competing for a wild card spot.
But
they just went 1-5 on a road trip, and they're not under 500.
I understand, but they're a 500 ball club, in my opinion.
Well, okay, a week ago they were four games over.
If they'd been into almost a guaranteed playoff spot, being
there's
that they
no
had
such
the
thing.
Players that they could have had, then they would have had the season tickets for next year. They'd had the season tickets for the year after. They would have been filling up the place. They could have sold the rights for their television and radio for a lot more money if they'd had Hugh Darvish and Prince Fielder.
Jeremy, I appreciate your passion. I do. I think you're completely incorrect. Going into this season, the Detroit Tigers were the consensus best team in the league. They are under 500 right now. I still believe they're going to win the AL Central. But they're under 500 right now. And there is no such thing as a guaranteed playoff spot. No matter what you do, no matter who you bring in, you cannot guarantee yourself a playoff spot. And we're in Toronto, remember. So no matter what kind of team you put on the field to start the season, you're not selling season tickets for next year. You're not selling out the place. You're not doing a thing until it's September and the Blue Jays are in first place. Ed is in Toronto listening on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Hello, Ed.
How are you?
I continue to be okay, thank you.
And that absolutely astounds me, given the people that you've had to deal with
you know what?
Previously.
Fans are passionate, And sometimes passion can overwhelm logic, and that's okay every once in a while.
But passion and reason are not mutually exclusive. I'm going to get to my points, and we'll stop belaboring Jeremy. I wanted to say that when I saw Morrow kind of blow up, I got a little worried because of the type of troubles he was having. Made me think injury before just having a bad day, and I hope that's not the case. But
they have said many times, but you know, we don't know if they're telling you the truth or not.
I just never seen that kind of drop in velocity, and combined with the loss of control, it just... I guess he's so critical to our success this year, it worried me a little bit. But today I thought was explainable because Drabek is, I think he's a Texas boy. Like, I think it's his home state.
Yep.
And he always seems to put more pressure on himself and get a little stiffer. When it comes to people observing him, he's very conscious of it, and he puts too much pressure on himself. And doing that in his hometown state in front of Nolan, who probably was a hero of his, and Lord knows maybe his parents were there and friends were there, and I think
he's too young
well.
For Nolan Ryan to be a hero of his.
Okay, then, well, Rocket Swift maybe, but the point is there are a lot of Texas hurlers who I'm sure he's looked at going as he's developed, and I just think in that was an important step in his development, because each start where he, like, I think we're his level is probably closer to the Yankees than what we saw today, and I still believe that, even though he's a frustrating prospect or a young player. I think that there's a lot of upside still ahead, and eventually he'll learn. These are mental things, not physical things, so I think that there's a strong potential for him to get a grasp at it. But the idea of going out and getting a free agent and overspending for one where everybody wants an inning eater, 200 inning guy, we're going to have to overpay for and mortgage a significant portion of our young players for, I don't think it makes sense. We have to see what these players can do. They got to learn, and you know, they got to suffer through adversity in order to get better. If they just have a clean slate from beginning to end, I don't think they're ever going to reach their actual potential, because adversity helps you develop. So I didn't like what I saw this weekend.
Well, how could you? And nobody should. Nobody should be sitting there thinking, oh, that's okay. That's going to happen. It's going to happen, but it's not okay. It's no fun.
There's a lot of upside in what we saw. The only thing that, and I don't want to be one of these people who calls on to slam a player for one or two things or whatever, but I just feel like in left field, if we're not going to get more offense, then we need more defense. And team...
I don't disagree with you, Ed. I want to get to some more people, so I'm going to let you go. I think the Eric Thames situation is going to be coming to a head pretty soon. I don't quite know how. Travis Snyder's on the disabled list, so it's not like you can just get him, but it does seem like something's coming there. Jim in Mississauga, listening on our flagship Sportsnet 590, The Fan. You got a minute, Jim. Make it good.
Okay, a high-ceiling pitcher is described as a guy who throws over 95 miles an hour like Hendelson Alvarez. I want to talk about the ceiling of the potential of Alex Anthopoulos. I think because of his lack of competitive baseball experience, his ceiling is more like Gord Ashes and nothing like Pat Gillick's, and we're going to have a Gord Ash type of baseball team as long as Anthopoulos is in charge.
I think your thesis statement is flawed at its base. I don't believe there's any reason to believe that whether Alex Anthopoulos played baseball competitively or not has anything to do with his ability as a general manager. Oh, well. Asked you to make it good. Didn't quite work out that way. Yeah, but whatever. We're going to take a look at the scoreboard when we return. We'll say goodbye to the network, but we will keep it around till 7 o'clock Eastern time here on our flagship station, or on our flagship Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Blue Jays get thumped 12-6 by the Rangers. It is the Blue Jays Radio Network. Back here, Baseball Control in Toronto. Blue Jays fall 12-6 to the Texas Rangers. Let's take a look. The scoreboard, see what else is going on in the American League. Right now, the New York Yankees lead the Oakland Athletics 2-0. Andrew Jones has his fifth home run of the season. Hiroki Kuroda, who looked so bad against the Blue Jays last week, in his last start, has looked so good, shutting out the A's on four hits through seven innings. They're going to the top of the eighth now. 2-0 New York. Tampa Bay Rays got a two-run homer from Sean Rodriguez in the ninth inning to beat the Boston Red Sox 4-3, so a blown save for Alfredo Aceves. Fernando Rodney gets another save. He's got 16 of them right now. Kansas City took down Baltimore 4-2. Billy Butler and Jeff Francoeur went deep. So the Orioles and Rays are now tied for first in the AL East. If the Yankees hold on to win, they will be 2.5 back. The Blue Jays, 5 games back, and the Red Sox, 5.5 games back, but the Jays, 2.5 back of the Yankees for that second wild card in the East. And that, again, is if the Yankees hold on to this 2-0 lead against Oakland. It was the White Sox over Cleveland, 12-6. So the White Sox are now just a half game out of first in the AL Central. Detroit took down the Twins 4-3 to move 3 games back of the Tribe. In the National League, Dodgers leading Houston 2-1 in the bottom of the 7th. Brewers and Diamondbacks tied at 3 in the bottom of the 6th. Earlier, the Mets beat San Diego 7-0. The Reds and Rockies set a Great American Ballpark record, combining for 9 homers in a 7-5 Cincinnati win. It was Pittsburgh over the Cubs 10-4. Chicago has lost 12 in a row. And St. Louis beat the Phillies 8-3. Yadier Molina with a first-inning grand slam off of Roy Halladay, who left with shoulder soreness after 2 innings. Blue Jays are home for a week starting tomorrow. We will be on the air at 7 o'clock Eastern for a 7:07 first pitch tomorrow night as the Jays open a 3-game set with the Orioles. Drew Hutchison against Tommy Hunter. You've been listening to Home Hardware Blue Jays Baseball. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by Authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership or the Blue Jays Radio Network. For Jerry Howard, Alan Ashby, Tom Young, Dylan Brown, and Gord Brunt, I'm Mike Wilner. Good evening from Toronto.
Here's a drive to left field, and deep going back is Thames. He's at the track, at the wall, leaps, and it hits the top of the wall and goes out of here. A 2-run home run for Ian Kinsler. So apparently, he was listening in and said, I got some pop left. His 6th on the year, and it makes it a 9-1 Texas lead.
9-1 Texas in the second inning. It was over then, even though the Blue Jays did manage to put 6 up on the board. The Rangers beat them 12-6 is your final score. I'm Mike Wilner. We're going to take some more of your calls for another little while, and then we have a nice treat to kind of get the bad taste of this out of your mouth. You'll hear from Ricky Romero's college roommate on the other side of Doug Roxburgh's update. Yunel Escobar comes out of this game with left groin tightness. Brett Laurie finished up at shortstop, and Kelly Johnson's got a little hamstring thing. So it's interesting to note that in today's 8-3 win for Las Vegas over Salt Lake, and Adam Lind went 1-for-5 with 2 RBIs, by the way, Adani Echevarria did not play. It is possible, I'm not going to go so far as to say it's probable, but it is possible that Adani Echevarria is on his way to Toronto to join the Blue Jays with Kelly Johnson or maybe Yunel Escobar winding up on the disabled list. More of your calls. Dave in Vancouver. Welcome to the Blue Jays Talk here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Mike, it's always a pleasure to listen to the program and to talk to you. You know, I hear a little weeping and gnashing of the teeth and a little rendering of the garments. Listen, we're at 500, and to be honest with you, I'm surprised we're at 500. We're going with 3 rookie pitchers. We have a so-so bullpen. You know, we've had certain batters that haven't done that. I mean, Lynn ended up in the minors, and we played 500. And we just played against the 2 teams that probably will be fighting it out in the American League for the representative in the World Series. I mean, the Texas Rangers twice in the World Series, and this Tampa team, you know, led by a brilliant manager in Joe Maddon, who went out and got Scott. And went out and got Pena back, got some pop back in the lineup. No surprise there. So for the fans to be that tough on them, I don't understand it. I mean, this is a club that's building. I figure we're looking at 2 to 3 years down the road. These kids need time. I mean, look how long Romero, et cetera, developed. That being the case, we've got to be patient with this ball club. And, you know, and the bottom line is, at least the Jays are entertaining. You know, it's a sad commentary. Somebody pointed out on the show, Mike, it's the 4th largest market in North America. And for having 3 professional teams, it's the worst performing market in North America. At least the Jays are entertaining. They're doing a lot more than the Raptors and Leafs. I can just put it that way to you, Mike.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it. I love that you're always ready to go and rolling. And that's really something to consider. You know what? Something to consider that with everything that's gone wrong, because it really does seem like so much has gone wrong for the Blue Jays this year. 24-24, 2.5 games out of a playoff spot. And that's something that you know, if we had run down the list of everything that would have that's happened, if we had run down that list in March and said, so where are the Blue Jays going to be at the end of May? Last place, 10 games under 500, something like that. And yet they're not. Irving is in Toronto. Hello, Irving.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the radio and stuff.
How are you? I wasn't supposed to ask you that.
Go ahead, please.
Tell me why there is so little evaluation of our general manager and our manager. How come you never discuss what they're doing right or wrong? I have been watching baseball.
I think I do all the time.
You think so, eh?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then I guess I'm not listening very well. I've been watching baseball for 65 years, and I have never seen a manager who's an ex-pitcher and pitching coach handle a pitching staff as badly as John Farrell handles ours.
What's he been doing wrong?
Everything. He doesn't use rested pitchers when they can perform. He gets two shutouts in a row, and he doesn't bring in a totally rested pitcher. The day before yesterday, when we are losing 10-1, and he knows that tomorrow he may need Fraser, he has the audacity to pitch Fraser in a 10-1 game. And then, of course, it's not his fault that he had to bring in a tired Fraser yesterday 3 days in a row. Today,
so you wanted two position players to pitch on Friday night?
I don't care who had to pitch, but you can't use Fraser in a 10-1 game.
Fraser's your fourth best reliever, right?
Look, Mike, you can't use him 3 days in a row. You know that, and he should know that.
Jason Fraser was not used 3 days in a row.
Three times in a row. There was a day off in between.
Right. So okay. The fact that Jason Fraser was used on Friday night should not have precluded him from being available to pitch on Saturday. The fact that Jason Fraser threw 31 pitches in one inning on Friday night was the problem. And that wasn't John Farrell's fault.
But now he can't use him on Saturday. That's what happened.
I understand that.
He shouldn't use him in a 10-1 game.
So who do you use?
It's just a small example.
So who do you use?
Whoever you have out there. But you don't use a relief pitcher who the next day you may have to use when you're losing 10-1. And it's just
Irving, stop yelling at me. Okay? I understand you're upset. Stop yelling at me. When you have seven pitchers in your bullpen.
This is just a tiny example. Let's not concentrate.
Okay, fine. Then give me more. I mean, you've told me he's done everything wrong.
Well, look back and have a peek at what he does. He brings in a situational lefty who should pitch to a lefty and get out of there. No, he keeps pitching. Mr. Oliver, a good pitcher.
Who is not a situational left-hander at all.
Okay, well, that's your opinion.
No, it's not my opinion. It's a fact, oh, Irving. Okay. Thank you. I gotta go. You're upset. I don't like getting yelled at, but we're out of time anyway. Darren Oliver's not a situational lefty. So far, you know, I talk about John Farrell. I talk about Alex Anthopoulos all the time. I think Alex is doing a wonderful job. I think John Farrell's doing fine. And when there's something that really, really stinks, I talk about it. Believe me, just like I praise when they're doing well. Thanks for the calls. Appreciate them all. It was a tough weekend. And I don't feel like being a punching bag. So the next segment, like I said, we're going to get away from all the doom and gloom and have some happiness. And you'll hear from Ricky Romero's college roommate. Very interesting. Nice little talk. That's next. This is the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. back to baseball control in Toronto. Blue Jays get thumped by the Texas Rangers. Just an ugly series and just a road trip to forget as the Blue Jays go 1-5 through Tampa Bay and Texas this week. They come home for 500 ball club at 24-24 to open up a six-game homestand against the Baltimore Orioles and the Boston Red Sox. Just remember, it's important to remember, that before the Blue Jays went out on this road trip, the Blue Jays swept the Yankees and took 2 out of 3 from the Mets, and everybody was really happy. And you will be really happy again, I promise. I don't know when, might happen right away, but you will be really happy again. Let's get away from all the doom and gloom and all the 1-5 and all the how terrible the Blue Jays are and step back and have a little fun, get a little insight into one of the key players in the Blue Jays. And yes, he hasn't been going well either. Ricky Romero had a career-high 7 walks against the Tampa Bay Rays in the finale of that series on Wednesday afternoon. But Ricky Romero remains the Blue Jays ace. And there's very good reason to believe that he's going to wind up turning things around and he will be just fine. But we're not talking about Ricky Romero's problems with command or control right now. Try to get inside his head a little bit. And how better to get inside somebody's head than to talk with someone who knows them really, really, really well. When the Mets were in town last weekend, I got the opportunity to sit down and speak to Justin Turner, who's an infielder with the New York Mets, who was also a teammate of Ricky Romero's at Cal State Fullerton as they were college baseball players together in the NCAA, but he was a lot more than just a teammate. Here's my conversation with Justin Turner. Justin Turner, the second day of this series with the Mets, you were out there taking ground balls at third base, and Ricky Romero started chirping you from the dugout about having faced you the night before. And I turned to Ricky and I said, did you guys go to school together? And he said, are you kidding me? That's my brother. We were roommates, so I got to talk to you. First of all, what was it like going up against him that first night?
It was exciting, you know. We got a lot of messages from friends and family back home, and, you know, we're both pretty competitive, and I guess he got the better part of me. I went 0-for-3 and hit into a couple of double plays against him, but it's always fun to go out there and play against one of your best friends at this level, so.
It's not something to be too upset about. I mean, he's induced the most double plays of any pitcher in the major leagues over the last three years, so you're in good company.
I did not know that.
So tell me about, what it was like in college. We were just in Oakland, so we saw Kurt Suzuki down there as well. You guys were teammates. And Ricky, I'm assuming, because he was a top 6 draft pick, must have been one of the guys that everyone was always paying attention to and looking at.
He always had a power arm coming from the left side. And he was a big part of, you know, what we did in 2004, winning the national championship. And like you said, Suzuki was there, and a guy named Brett Pill, who's with the Giants now, playing first base, and Vinny Pistano, who's a reliever with the Indians. So we had a good group of guys, come through there and be a part of that. And it's fun to go around to different cities and get to compete against them in a different color.
So we've seen you at first, second, and third. Where did you play in college?
My freshman year, I played shortstop, and then a guy named Blake Davis, who was up with the Orioles last year, who was also one of Ricky and myself's roommates, he came out of his red shirt and he went to short, and then I moved over to second. So,
tell me a little bit about home life with Ricky Romero. If you had Blake Davis there too, I'm assuming you guys had like an apartment or something. It wasn't just the two of you all the time?
It was me, Ricky, and Danny Dorn, who's with the Reds. He's in Louisville right now. The three of us lived together all 3 years, and Blake was with us our freshman year, and then we had another guy our sophomore year, and then a kid named Brandon Tripp, who's with the Phillies now, our junior year. So the fourth roommate kind of got shuffled around, but the three of us were together all the time.
With Justin Turner, Ricky Romero's college roommate, was there like an odd couple thing going on? Were you the slob and he was a neat guy, or did it go the other way or something?
No, I mean, we made our messes, but we always were pretty good about cleaning up after ourselves, and I don't know, it was just a great time, you know, when you get to live out for the first time, and when you're with that caliber of guys, you know, with Ricky and Danny and obviously Blake Davis, it makes it fun both on and off the field, so.
when you talk about the caliber of guy, we've gotten to know Ricky over the last few years, and he really does seem like just an out, I mean, we only find out what you guys want to show us, right? But he seems like an outstanding guy, and he's already become a leader here in just 3 years in the big leagues. And I mean, he just exudes this, not only confidence, but goodness about him. He helps people out and, you know, stuff like that.
Absolutely. You know, he comes from a family that just full of awesome people. His mom and dad are unbelievable, pretty close with them. And his brother and two sisters obviously are outstanding people as well. And, you know, they're number one for him. His first priority is to make sure he takes care of his family, and he's already done that. He's bought his parents a house in Downey, moved them out of East L.A., and, you know, it's really neat to see, you know, how caring and how much passion and love he has, you know, for his family and what he does for them, and no matter what happens, they always come first.
Before I let you go, Justin Turner, I got to ask you, the first 3 years of Ricky's pro career, he struggled through the minor leagues. He never had a successful minor league season. People here were talking about him being a bust already, and there were all these, oh, you should have taken Troy Tulowitzki, who was the next pick. Were you, you know, you must have had an eye on him and known about that kind of stuff. What did you think was going on there?
It's just a confidence thing, you know, especially being a first rounder. You know, there's a lot of pressure on him. Everyone thinks that he's supposed to be, you know, amazing every time he goes on the mound, and this game's not like that. It doesn't matter, you know, where you were drafted. It's a lot of work to go out and to have success in this game. And so in those first couple of years, I was actually playing with the Reds with Danny Dorn. We were on the same teams, and we got some phone calls from him where, you know, he was actually thinking about maybe hanging him up. You know, it was getting to a point where, you know, he had zero confidence and the game wasn't fun for him, and he was, you know, getting beat up every time he took the ball. And you know, finally, I don't know what it was. We had conversations with him. I'm not going to say that's what it was. I'm not going to take credit for it, but you know, something clicked and he started commanding his pitches, and next thing we know, you know, he's a number one for the Toronto Blue Jays, and he's a superstar in this game. So it's actually been a pretty neat road for him.
It has, and I take it you're not surprised at the success he's had in the major leagues.
Absolutely not. I mean, you know, he's one of the most confident guys I know now. At the time when he was going through his struggles, obviously he lost that, and I think that's part of the reason he is successful now, is he's so confident in himself and his ability. And I think I saw it on the board the other day. He said he's a bulldog, and that's pretty accurate. You know, he's intimidating out there on the mound. He comes right at you, and I don't think he's afraid of anyone. And you know, that's the guy I knew at Cal State Fullerton, and obviously the guy that, you know, we saw out here Friday night.
Do you have a Ricky Romero story that you can share with us that he may not want you to share with us? Something that you guys still laugh about from back in the Cal State Fullerton days that he wouldn't get too upset with you for telling us?
I mean, it might be a little cheesy, but, and you guys might already know this, every day he pitches on game day, he eats pancakes for breakfast. I don't know if you knew that. And that started in college, I was on the wagon with him too. So every morning, Friday morning, when he's pitching, we go to McDonald's, get the hot cakes and sausage. And then that continued on when he got to pro ball. And actually Friday morning when I was here, I went to breakfast with him. He got some pancakes. So, the funny thing is, when we got to Omaha and we're playing in the World Series, we'd have team breakfasts in the morning. And they'd be catered or whatever by the hotel or wherever we're staying. Well, we go down to breakfast, and either someone from my family or someone from his family would deliver McDonald's pancakes to us. So that's something that obviously has worked out pretty good for him. He's sticking to it, and he's still doing it. And I don't know if that's the kind of story you're looking for, but that's what you're going to get.
I'll take it. So was this Friday, was that McDonald's, or did you go someplace a little nicer?
No, we went to a restaurant over here. He had some pancakes and eggs and fruit and stuff, so... It's a little healthier, but...
A little bit, yeah, and you know what's in it. Thanks so much for your time. We didn't get to talk about you at all, but, you know, it was a very cool story, you coming up last year and having success, and we wish you continued success with the Mets. And, you know, if you go 0-3 every time you face Ricky, that's all right with us.
That's not all right with me. I'm going to get him one of these days.
That's what he thinks.
one of these days. We shall see. We shall see when the Blue Jays play the New York Mets again. Who knows what interleague is going to be like after this year with the Houston Astros moving into the American League with interleague required now on a regular basis next year. And that's a whole other thing. Next year, and from then on, it feels like we're going to have interleague play every day. So no more of these blocks of interleague, a weekend in May and then a couple of weeks in June, and then it's over with. But we'll see how many times the New York Mets face the Blue Jays, and we'll see where Justin Turner's career winds up taking him. Always very cool to talk to those guys. I like to get them together with their buddies and ex-teammates, but it just wasn't possible this time. Tried to get Kurt Suzuki and Ricky Romero together in Oakland, but that was a quick little two-game series, so that didn't work out either. But we continue to endeavor to do stuff like that because we know you like to hear it. Well, we hope you like to hear it. I like to hear it. I think it's really interesting. Justin Turner, former college roommate of Ricky Romero's. The Blue Jays haven't quite left the building in Texas yet, but they will soon, and they can't wait to get home, believe me. Dropping a 12-6 decision this afternoon to the Rangers, getting swept out of Texas, a place where they usually play really, really well, after dropping 2 out of 3 to the Tampa Bay Rays in Tampa. Well, actually in St. Petersburg, a place where they usually don't play really, really well. This is, though, the first time this season that the Blue Jays have been at 500 since opening day. They had been above 500 the first 47 games of the season, and they get thumped today after losing that heartbreaker in extra innings yesterday, after getting absolutely pounded on Friday night, and they will come home 24-24, fourth in the American League East, a half game ahead of the last place Boston Red Sox. And they will meet the Red Sox on the next homestand. That's Friday, Saturday, Sunday of next week. They start the homestand against the Baltimore Orioles, who currently share first place in the American League East with the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. That series begins tomorrow night. We're on at 7 o'clock Eastern time for a 7:07 first pitch. It will be Drew Hutchison on the hill for the Blue Jays against Canadian country music icon Tommy Hunter, who goes for the Orioles. And like I said before, the Blue Jays had won 4 of 5 going into this road trip, and they could certainly come out of it and do that again. That's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to Gord Brunt. Thanks to Dylan Brown. And, of course, on their way back from Texas, thanks to Jerry Howard, Alan Ashby, and Tom Young. We will talk to you tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Blue Jays and Orioles. See you then.